And so we ask, who are these? And he said, the children whom God hath given, hath graciously given unto thy servant. I don't think that was hypocrisy. I think that he recognizes that all of these gifts and blessings are from God. And this is certainly the way that we should look at them. God hath graciously given to thy servant. And I don't look at that as hypocrisy. He realized he is the younger, although he wanted the birthright and got the birthright. Yet at the same time, he realizes that this is the older brother, and he's ready to serve him in that way. I don't look upon him as a hypocrite here. I think he's a genuine character growing in his faith. Then the handmaids came near, they and their children, and they bound themselves. And Leah also with her children, remember she had six sons and Dinah, came near and bowed themselves. And after came Joseph near and Rachel. Apparently Joseph stepped out ahead there, and they bowed themselves. And he said, what meanest thou of all this company which I met? As Esau speaking. And he said, to find favor in the sight of my Lord. No hypocrisy there, isn't that? That's just an honest answer. That's what he sent them for. He wants to find favor. I don't think he's trying to buy them off. He's just simply trying to find favor with him. He wants this meeting to be as cordial and congenial as it possibly can be. And Esau said, I have enough, my brother. Let that which thou hast be thine. And Jacob said, nay, I pray thee. If now I have found favor in thy sight, then receive my present at my hand. For as much as I have seen thy face, as one seeth the face of God, and thou wast pleased with me. I think that last thought expresses what he means by as one sees the face of God. I don't literally see the face of God, but I've seen your face in a favorable light, favorable toward me. As I would look to the face of God to be favorable toward me when I approach him. Now, to me, this is what he meant. Rather than that I've actually seen God at some time, I don't think that's the point at all there. And so I want to, now he knows this, that if Esau accepts this present, then this will be a bond between them. To accept the present of this one would be an acceptance of the present himself. And that's what Jacob is wanting. He doesn't want any conflict. He's had all of this he wants. He wants to, with a Laban. He wants to live a quiet life now. And I can understand that. Now take, I pray thee, my gift that is brought to thee, because God hath dealt graciously with me, and because I have enough, I have plenty. Now notice God in this. These are my children whom God hath given me. All right? Now these are my possessions which God hath given to me. Now you see in them, this is what I want you to know, because so often we speak disparagingly of Jacob. In fact, it took me a long time to come to really appreciate Jacob. I just didn't have a very high opinion of him. But I have now. That's grown. And especially after this fight to Padan Aram, his experience there and his coming back, he shows a faith in God all the way through. And he urged him, and he took it. And he said, let us take our journey, and let us go, and I will go before thee. Now this is Esau speaking. And now Jacob responds. He said unto him, My Lord knoweth that the children are tender, and that the flocks and herds with me have their young. Right? Now that's a statement of fact, a statement of truth there. And if they overdrive them one day, all the flocks will die. That is, I'll lose my flock. I'll be going much slower. Your 400 men will become very impatient, traveling along at my pace. And besides, since I found you favorable, you are toward me nothing to fear from anyone here. Let my Lord, I pray thee, pass over before his servant, and I will lead on gently according to the pace of the cattle that are before me, and according to the pace of the children, until I come unto my Lord, unto Seir. Now Seir is that country south of the Dead Sea. Mount Seir was to the Edomites what Mount Zion was to the Jews. Only it was a range of mountains down there, but this was their stronghold in Mount Seir. And it was called the Land of Seir, south of the Dead Sea. And you go and I will come unto thee. And Esau said, let me now leave with thee some of the folk that are with me, some of my soldiers. And he said, what needeth it? Let me find favor in the sight of my Lord. What do I need with it? I have nothing, you and I peace, nothing to fear here. And I have nothing to fear from the people of the land, so far as I know. Why do I need a guard? So Esau returned that day on his way unto Seir. Now, we might raise the question, did Jacob ever pay that visit that he promises here? I don't know. He could have. You've got a number of years in here before the two men meet at the death of their father Isaac. Now, that's not for a while. So he may have. He might have gotten them settled at Succoth, or it might have been while he was at Shechem. He might have made a trip down to see his brother. The Bible doesn't deal with all of those details like that, which have no bearing on the development of the theme that God's developing. We'd love to know, but what would it amount to? Curiosity. Here's a thing I learned a good many years ago, that the Bible never answers a question that merely gratifies curiosity. You ever thought about that? I'm sure you have. But if you haven't, think about it. I don't know of any place where the Bible answers questions that merely gratify curiosity. They're always questions that pertain to something of the scheme of redemption or the revelation of God or man's needs or something like that. God doesn't answer those other questions. All right? So did he go to see him? I don't know. And Jacob journeyed to Succoth, which the word means booth or booths, and built him a house and made booths for his cattle. Therefore the name of the place is called Succoth. That would be just east of the Jordan River, just across the Jordan, and I believe just a little bit north of the Jabbok. So since he crossed the Jabbok to meet Esau, now then as he moves west and the Jabbok turns south and then back again, well, he crossed the Jabbok again. Now he built himself a house there and he built booths for his cattle. These would simply be a shed with maybe a grass or palm covering, something of that nature, and to protect them from the winter, the cold. But at any rate, how long did he stay there? I don't know that we know. But it just says if he took time to build him a house, a place to live in, and made these booths for the cattle, he might have stayed there some time. This I don't know. And what I'm trying to do is to find time in here for these boys to grow up, to where these two, Simeon and Levi, are old enough and strong enough to take some of the men that worked with them. They probably took their servants and slew all of the men of Shechem, which we'll come to in a moment. So they were not just lads, just children. And yet they were not mature men. I mean by that, they were not old as we think of them sometimes. I'd put them when they get to Shechem, somewhere around 20, 21, or 2. I don't know that that's correct. Somewhere along there, probably. And Jacob came in peace to the city of Shechem. All right, so he stayed at Succoth. How long? I don't know. Now, he came in peace to the city of Shechem, which is in the land of Canaan, when he came from Padan Aram and encamped before the city. Coming from the east, that would suggest then that he camped east of the city of Shechem. He had large herds and flocks and a large family and men to work for him. He had to have a large number of servants because of that large number of stock, camels and the donkeys and the cattle and the sheep and the goats and all of that, large herds and flocks. And if you took 580 out and set them on ahead as a gift, why, that wouldn't be a great number out of it, I'm sure. I wouldn't know how what proportion, but he wouldn't have been half or anything like that. And he bought the parcel of ground where he had spread his tent at the hand of the children of Hamor, Shechem's father, for 100 pieces of money. Now those pieces of money, you have out here the word kesitah, and nobody, that's the only time I believe that word occurs in the Old Testament. And of course, nobody knows what the value of it would be. But at least it was $100 and whatever they were. and he erected there an altar and called it El Elohe Israel. That is God, or the mighty God, the God of Israel. So now you see him, the first thing he does when he gets into this land back in Canaan now, from which he had fled, which God promised Abraham and Isaac and promised him in chapter 28 when the Lord appeared to him on his way to Padan Aram. So now here he builds an altar unto God, called it El Elohe Israel. Now we come in the 34th chapter to a very unfortunate situation here, and it turns out to be a very ugly picture here on the part of the sons. And Dinah, the daughter of Leah, whom she bare unto Jacob, went out to see the daughters of the land. Now, how old was she? Well, by this time she'd probably, we don't know how old, but I'd say maybe 15 to 18, something like that. maybe 14 to 18, in that general area there. Just a girl coming into her teens and into her young womanhood here. Now, what prompted her to go? Did she ask her father? Did she go without his consent? Or was it curiosity? Or did the girls invite her? We don't know about that. A lot of things there we think about. And Shechem, the son of Hamor, the Hivite, the prince of the land, saw her, and he took her and lay with her and humbled her. Now, of course, to us and to Israel, to Jacob, this was a very great sin. To the Canaanites, it wasn't. This was just a part of the Canaanite society. It was very corrupt. Their religion, known as the fertility religion or the fertility cult, the worship of Baal and the Asheroth and all of that, that involved fornication in its worship. That was a part of it. Immorality characterized it. And so, here was a foreigner, and a foreigner was just fair game for anybody that could seduce this girl, and he did. But there was another aspect of it. He fell in love with her. And his soul, that is his life, clave unto Dinah, the daughter of Jacob, and he loved the damsel, and spake kindly unto the damsel. And although he did humble the girl, he did fall in love with her. And Shechem spake unto his father Hamor, saying, get me the damsel to wife. He's a young prince. I don't know, he seemed to be a pretty nice chap, except for his morals here, far as we can tell. But at any rate, he's a little bit spoiled. Get me this damsel, I want her. It sounds like that, like old Samson, doesn't it, down there when he saw a girl and he wanted that gal down there among the Philistines there. Well, that's what he said here. Now Jacob heard that he had defiled Dinah, his daughter, and his sons were with his cattle in the field. And Jacob held his peace until they came. And Hamor, the father of Shechem, went out unto Jacob to commune with him. And the sons of Jacob came in from the field when they heard it, and the men were grieved, and they were very wroth, because he had wrought folly in Israel in lying with Jacob's daughter, which things ought not to be done. Well, that's correct. Now, the boys, these sons, show up pretty good here in this, better than they do later, when they were shocked at what had taken place. It was their sister. And you will notice which they had wrought folly in Israel. Does that indicate now a growth in respect for the Israel idea, or the development here of the promise that God had made to him as the one that is selected? Possibly it does. You can think about that. That it shows here maybe a respect for something spiritual, which later on they don't demonstrate. I was ought not to be done. And Hamor communed with them, saying, the soul of my son Shechem longeth for your daughter. I pray you, give her unto him to wife, and make ye marriages with us. Give your daughters unto us, and take our daughters unto you. And you shall dwell with us, and the land shall be before you. Dwell and trade ye therein, and get you possessions therein. Build up your life here with us, and grow wealthy here in this area. And Shechem said unto her father and unto her brethren, let me find favor in your eyes. And what ye shall say unto me, I will give. Now, being a heathen as he was, a worshiper of these pagan gods, immoral, the whole society one of immorality, he shows up pretty good when you think about that, when you think of his background and all of that. In this, ask me never so much dowry and gift, and I will give according as you shall say unto me. But give me the damsel to wife. And the sons of Jacob answered, Shechem and Hamor his father, with guile, that is with deception. You know, they take over. They do the talking. And they're talking now with deception, with guile. And spake because he had defiled Dinah, their sister, and said unto them, we cannot do this thing to give our sister to one that is uncircumcised, for that will reproach unto us. Of course, that goes back to the covenant that God made with Abraham, Isaac, and Jacob. And these sons, I'm sure, had been circumcised. They had been born. For that were a reproach unto us. Only on this condition will we consent unto you, if you will be as we are, that every male of you be circumcised. Then will we give our daughter unto you, and we will take your daughters to us, and we will dwell with you, and we will become one people. Now they were deceived. They were lying. There was no intention whatever to do that. That would have been a violation. Jacob couldn't have consented to it. Been a violation of the covenant that God had made with Abraham, with Isaac, and with him. That they keep the bloodstream pure here. But if ye will not hearken unto us to be circumcised, then will we take our daughter, and we will be gone. Suffer the humiliation, and be on our way. Well, notice the response. And their words pleased Hamor and Shechem, Hamor's son. And the young man deferred not to do the thing. That is, just as soon as they could meet with the men of the city and all agree, why, he was anxious to go ahead and comply with this. He wanted to marry this girl. Deferred not to do the thing because he had delight in Jacob's daughter. And he was honored above all the house of his father. Evidently well respected in the city. And Hamor and Shechem his son came under the gate of their city and communed with the men of the city, saying, now the gate is the place where they met, where the people come and go. There they met and held the city councils, or the cases of court and law and all that was at the gate. You read that over and over. You're familiar with that. These men are peaceable with us. Therefore let them dwell in the land and trade therein. For behold, the land is large enough for them. Let us take their daughters to us for wives, and let us give them our daughters. Only on this condition will the men consent unto us to dwell with us, to become one people, if every male among us be circumcised, as they are circumcised. Now notice, it's not going to be a partial thing. Every male must be circumcised. Shall not, now note, now here's a little insight into this also. Shall not their cattle and their substance and all their beasts be ours? Only let us consent unto them, and they will dwell with us. In other words, by trading and all of that, becoming one nation or people, while theirs will become ours also. Apparently they had a pretty large flock, maybe more than these Shechemites had, and that was an appeal to them. So not only a matter then of this young prince getting the girl, but also here's just an opportunity to make a buck on the side, as we would say. That's right. And unto Hamor and unto Shechem his son hearkened all that went out of the gate of the city, and every male was circumcised, all that went out of the gate of his city. And it came to pass on the third day, when they were sore, that would be at the worst, that two of the sons of Jacob, Simeon and Levi, Dinah's brethren, took each man his sword and came upon the city unawares and slew all the males. Now the question naturally arises in our mind, how could two men do that? I'm going to present a guess, and that's all it is, that they took with them their servants. They could have done that, still be just the two men. But they could have taken these servants from the flocks and the herds and armed them and taken them, and whether they did or not, I don't know. But that is a possibility in the matter, and one that I think is worthy of thought here. But at any rate, they came in unawares, that is, boldly, and slew all the males. And they slew Hamor and Shechem his son with the edge of the sword, and took Dinah out of Shechem's house, and went forth. So apparently the girl had been kept in the house there during this time of conference and all that. The sons of Jacob came upon, now notice the rest of them come in now. Now seem to all participate now. The sons of Jacob came upon the slain and plundered the city because they had defiled their sister. Now they wouldn't go in and help the two brothers slay the men. They'll go in and partake of the spoils. That doesn't speak very well for them either, does it? Now these boys have got a long way to go to ever reach the point of faith of their father Jacob and grandfather Isaac and great-grandfather Abraham. Long way to go. They took their flocks and their herds and their asses and that which was in the city and that which was in the field and all their wealth and all their little ones and their wives took they captive and made a prey even all that was in the house. And they simply plundered the city. Went through the houses, rifled the houses, took everything there. Took these women and children, apparently going to use them for servants and slaves. Not told why, but they took them, kept them alive. And Jacob said to Simeon and Levi, you have troubled me to make me odious. That would be to make me to stink, would be a real accurate translation of it. Make me to stink to the inhabitants of the land among the Canaanites and the Perizzites. And I, being few in number, they will gather themselves together against me and smite me. And I shall be destroyed, I and my house. And they said, should he deal with our sister as with a harlot? As the only defense of what they had done. Now, I think what they've done, we can't commend it. We cannot at all. But at any rate, over here in the 49th chapter, verses 5 and 7, Jacob really has the last word in the matter. They had the last word there. But Jacob has it over here. When he says in his last blessing on his son, Simeon and Levi, brethren, weapons of violence are their swords. O my soul, come not thou into their council. Under their assembly, my glory, be not thou united. For in their anger they slew a man, and in their self-will they hocked an ox, or oxen. Now, we're not told back there in the history of that, but apparently that's a part of what they did. Cursed be their anger, for it was fierce, and their wrath, for it was cruel. I will divide them in Jacob and scatter them in Israel. Right? They were. Simeon got the inheritance to the south of Judah and was finally lost either in the southern with Judah or wandered back into the wilderness of Sinai and were lost. And Levi, the priestly group, they were scattered throughout among the people and did not have a land inheritance. They had 48 cities in their suburbs. Is what they had. And so, yeah, they would be scattered. And at any rate, in his pronouncing of blessings upon the people there, upon his sons, why, this is blessing on them. They were pretty fierce sort of boys. The older boy, Judah, there's Judah, then Simeon, Reuben. Reuben, then Simeon, Levi, and Judah there, Issachar and Zebulun. Those are the six children of Leah. Now, we move on in this, and so he leaves this place now, and he moves on from this. It's, where was I? Down here in about the verse, verse 31. All right, so here then is the meeting with Esau. Now, that was very fine. He comes into this city, well received, but here's an ugly aspect of the whole thing. So he's ready to leave now. But I want you to note his fear is the people will gang up against him. Now God said, I want you to note his leaving there was at the direction of Jehovah, God. And God said unto Jacob, arise, go up to Bethel and dwell there and make there an altar unto God who appeared unto thee when thou fleddest from the face of Esau, thy brother. Well, that was back in the 28th chapter, one of the last lessons we had last year, you recall here, in verse about 18 and 19, after Jacob had had that dream, and he rose up early in the morning and took the stone that he had put under his head and set it up, as in verse 18, for a pillar, and poured oil upon the top of it. And he called the name of the place Bethel. But the name of the city was Luz at the first. And Jacob vowed a vow, saying, if God will be with me, and will keep me in this way that I go, and will give me bread to eat and raiment to put on, so that I come again to my father's house in peace, and Jehovah will be my God, then this stone which I have set up for a pillar shall be God's house, Bethel, that means house of God, and of all that thou shalt give me, I will surely give the tenth unto thee. That has long been a question in my mind. How did Jacob give a tenth to Jehovah? In what way did he do it? Did he offer one sacrifice out of every? No, I know he didn't do that. One animal out of every ten is sacrificed. Who did he give it to? It's a recognition of the fact, and that even goes back, of course, earlier than that, when Abraham gave a tenth unto Melchizedek, indicating here that this was the prescribed amount from Jehovah, apparently from the very first. Now, I'm convinced personally, class, and if you were in my Isaiah class 2 or 3 or 4 years ago, whenever it was, I've forgotten. You won't remember it. But anyway, from chapter 23 to 27, or 24, 27, those chapters, in that he deals with what he calls the everlasting covenant which they had broken. That was a world judgment. Those chapters are not dealing with a judgment against Israel or Judah. That was a world judgment. Evidently, somewhere back there, God had made a covenant with the people either before they went into the Ark of the Noah's Ark, or after they came out of it, but somewhere a covenant had been made. They had broken that covenant. Now, it's my persuasion that somewhere back there in the covenant that God had made with mankind, even before Abraham, that the tenth had been prescribed. But I couldn't prove that. I didn't, because Abraham talked about the tenth, gave him a tenth. Jacob talks about the tenth. And you'll notice he said, the tenth, I give thee the tenth. With a D there, indicating that it was something prescribed. All right, now you can go from there and make on your study of that. All right. I notice he says he made there an altar. And so coming back now, and God said, arise, go to Bethel and dwell there, and make there an altar unto God, who appeared unto thee when thou fleddest from the face of Esau thy brother. Then Jacob said unto his household and to all that were with him, put away the foreign gods that are among you, and purify yourself, and change your garments, and let us arise and go up to Bethel, and I will make there an altar unto God, who answered me in the day of my distress, and was with me in the way which I went. All right, now he's going to leave now Shechem and go to Bethel, not very far away. I forget, 12 or 15 miles, if I remember correctly. Bethel, I think, was about 20 miles north of Jerusalem, and Shechem was something like, about 36, wasn't it? 5 or 6 or 7, something like that. So it wouldn't be very far. So he's going to come back to Bethel now. But give me all these gods. Well, that must be a cleansing before we go back. You can't combine the idols that you have with that. All right, now, that suggests to us that Rachel had stolen those teraphim, my father's teraphim, to worship. And as I told you, we mentioned 2 or 3 reasons when we studied last week. But I think that really she was going to worship them. Well, they gave them unto Jacob all the foreign gods which were in their land, and the rings which were in their ears, that apparently were some kind of good luck charms or something of that nature, from the idol concept. And Jacob hid them under the oak which was by Shechem. That is, he buried them there apparently. There was an oak there, the oak. You'll notice the oak of terebinth there. And they journeyed, and the terror of God was upon the cities that were round about them. and they did not pursue after the sons of Jacob. Now, I want you to note that. Now, would the terror of God been upon them if they had continued to hold on to those idols? No. No, but now, since Jacob has grown in his faith, now then, since the family are willing to put away their gods and bury them, now then, God put a terror upon the people that the people of the country did not attack them on that journey. So God protected them. Now, this is another thing you read in the Bible quite often, where God puts terrors on individuals and protects people. This question may sometimes be, how does God do it? Over and over, God raises up a people. Now, he raised up the Assyrians. He raised up the Babylonians. He raised up Nebuchadnezzar. He raised up Cyrus. He raised up Alexander. He raises up these individuals. How does he do it? I don't know. Couldn't tell you to save my life. Bible says he did. I believe he did. Because he said it. Now then, God put a terror on the people. How did he do that? I don't know. What was it? I don't know. God, I think, changed the heart of Esau to feel different toward his brother. Now, I think God works that way. I don't think we give God enough credit. I think our concept of God is too narrow. I think sometimes we just, our God isn't big enough, really, as I think he'd like to be. Think about that. Now, I don't mean by that he's a Santa Claus over yonder just willing to drop something into my sock every time I hold it up and say, Phil, this, don't believe that at all. But I do believe he hears prayer, answers prayer, and he protects his own. He looks after them. Well, look a little further. Right? And so he did not pursue after Jacob. So Jacob came to Luz, which is in the land of Canaan, the same as Bethel. We read that a while ago in 28:19. Right? Now, God had kept his promise and all of it he promised him back there. He and all the people that were with him. And he built there an altar and called the place El Beth-El. That is the God of the house of God, or the great God of the house of God. Beth-El is house of God. So here then is God of the house of God. Dwells in his house there. The other was El-Ro, wasn't it? El there. Because there God was revealed unto him when he fled from the face of his brother. And Deborah, Rebekah's nurse, died. And she was buried below Bethel under the oak, and the name of it was called Alon Baku. Baku, that is the oak of weeping. Now, where in the world did she come from? How did she get with him? Let me go back and read about her earlier back here an earlier passage here where she is mentioned back there as Rebecca's nurse back there. I think it's 24:59. I've got it marked here. 24:59. Now look at that back here. And they sent away Rebecca. And that's when they sent her away. I mean, she must have been an old woman by this time. 170 years old. You figure it out, she couldn't have been much less than that. They sent away Rebecca, their sister. That is Laban and Nahor did, and a nurse, and Abraham's servant, and his men. All right, now here is her nurse here that sent away with her, and now apparently I think it's the same one because I don't read of any others. But now, had she, when Rebekah died, did she go up and find Jacob and his family and reside with them? Or hearing that they're coming into the country, did she come and join them? Or where'd she come from? You reckon she did? Well, maybe so. Maybe her mother sent along to take care of her. But there's nothing said about it, is there? That's right. I don't know whether I already thought about him going alone, but maybe. Hey. Ma'am? Sir? No, this is I don't think so. No, I think this is our Rebecca here. And she's an old lady by now. But anyhow, that's just one of those interesting things that how she come to be with Jacob here, I don't know. Might have been that she'd reared him up from her babyhood. She might have gone with him. But it's interesting to note that she's never anywhere mentioned. But now all at once she dies. Now maybe she joined them here after they come back into the land. I don't know. I just threw that in to rouse your curiosity. Okay, that's another one of those. That's another one of those curiosity questions are not answered. That's right. What difference does it make? It only satisfy curiosity, wouldn't it? But it does. I do have a little bit there, don't you? Yeah. Well, I just have to leave it like that. Yes, sir. I'm sure she was. The question is, though, how did she get in this company of people? That's what. Did she go with Jacob? Did she meet him after he come back, go and join him? Rebecca having, I don't know. So just, we'll just leave it there. But anyhow, just an interesting question. She died and was buried there. All right? And now God appeared unto Jacob again when he came from Padan Aram and blessed him. And God said unto him, thy name is Jacob. Thy name shall not be called anymore Jacob, but Israel shall be thy name. And he called his name Israel. Now think what he means by that. That you're to be an Israel now and not a Jacob. No longer a supplanter. You're now one who has wrestled with God and prevailed and with men. So you're to be Israel, although he called Jacob many more times, but you're to be Israel and not Jacob. Right? And God said unto him, I am God Almighty, El Shaddai, that is God the strong one. I think that word means the broad-breasted one, hence the strong one. God Almighty, be fruitful and multiply. A nation and a company of nations shall be of thee, and kings shall come out of thy loins. Right? He had promised him before at Bethel he's going to make of him a nation. You remember when he saw that ladder extending to heaven and angels ascending and descending upon it there, and Jehovah at the head of it, there in that 28th chapter. God had renewed the promise that he made to Abraham and Isaac unto him, both the double promise. Make out of a nation, and he bless his seed, and his seed, the nations would be blessed. And the land which I gave unto Abraham and Isaac, to thee I will give it, and to thy seed after thee will I give the land. And God went up from him in the place where he spake with him. Went up, seemingly. An angel had appeared to him, a Jehovah's an angel. How he spoke to him, I don't know. At any rate, he went up from him. And Jacob set up a pillar in the place where he spake with him. Wouldn't be the same one of the 30 years before, 20 years, whenever it was, maybe 30, but now, we spent time at Succoth and Shechem, put up a pillar in the place where he spake with him, a pillar of stone, and he poured out a drink offering thereon and poured oil thereon. And Jacob called the name of the place where God spake with him Bethel, the house of God. Now, that plays an important part later on when the children of Israel come out of Egypt and to come to Bethel. And later on, that's where Jeroboam set up the golden calf. And what became the house Beth-Aven, the house of vanity, instead of Beth-El, the house of God. We'll deal with that when we come to it. Well, all right. We're getting along. Let's move on with him. And they journeyed from Bethel, and there was still some distance to come to Ephrath. And Rachel travailed, and she had hard labor. And it came to pass, when she was in hard labor, that the midwife said unto her, fear not, for now thou shalt have another son. And it came to pass, as her soul was departing, for she died, that she called his name Ben-Oni, that is, the son of my sorrow. That wouldn't be a good name to carry through life. So his father then called him Benjamin, that is, the son of my right hand. And Rachel died and was buried in the way to Ephrath, the same is Bethlehem. Now this word Ephrath means plenty or fruitful. Hence it was a fruitful region here in the neighborhood of Jerusalem. Bethlehem was 6 miles south of Jerusalem. So here he's coming from Bethel, 12 miles north, passes by Jerusalem. Then somewhere between there and Bethlehem, or maybe as he drew near to it, why she died. Let me go back and notice a statement back in the 30th chapter, in verse 24, when Joseph was born, called attention to this last Tuesday night. Now, when he was born, notice verse 24, and she called his name Joseph, saying, Jehovah, add to me another son. All right? So her prayer was that she would have another son. Now God had granted that prayer. That's what the midwife said. God's given you another son. So this son was an answer to the prayer of Rachel when Joseph was born. Right, now two sons then born unto her, Jacob through her. And Jacob set up a pillow upon her grave, the same as the pillow of Rachel's grave unto this day. Still standing when Moses wrote this history, oh, several hundred years later. Or at least 400 years later. Well, not quite 400, but anyway, a long time later. And Israel journeyed and spread his tent beyond the tower of Edom. That's a lookout for cattle and stuff. They would build a little tower, get up and look from it. You could look over and see the sheep or the cattle, whatever it was. And it came to pass, while Israel dwelt in that land, that Reuben went and lay with Bilhah, his father's concubine, and Israel heard it. That would be the handmaid of Rachel, who was dead. And again, you see another, that same sordid side to these boys. Well, remember this. They'd been brought up in this polygamous home, a bigamous home here. The father had been, when he was up there, he'd been busy, so busy working, that he hadn't spent the time with him that he should. I think you can learn a lesson there. I think that's the trouble so often with Christians. And we become so involved. I know it's true of preachers. Preachers can become so involved in the matter of preaching and holding meetings and teaching classes and getting to their study, that they neglect their children. I know that so because I did it. I was so concerned with meeting somewhere nearly every night, meetings all year, preaching for a church, teaching in a college, and studying for my lessons. Yes, I spent some time with them, but not enough. Didn't spend enough time with them. And many preachers have done that. I think more preachers lose their children than save them. Some of them save them, but more of them lose them than the other way. That's been my observation, generally speaking. All right? So here this son manifests a very, well, an immoral conduct. All right? Now the sons of Jacob, now they're named here, were 12, and he names them. The sons of Leah, Reuben, Jacob's firstborn, Simeon, Levi, Judah, Issachar, and Zebulun, and the sons of Rachel, Joseph and Benjamin, and the sons of Bilhah, Rachel's handmaid, Dan and Naphtali, and the sons of Zilpah, Leah's handmaid, Gad and Asher. These are the sons of Jacob that were born to him in Padan Aram. Now, we realize that Benjamin wasn't. He was born here in this land. But he's putting them together as a family. So as a family generally, and because Rachel came out of Padan Aram, and so he speaks of all of them as having come the result of his going into Padan Aram. And Jacob came unto Isaac his father to Mamre, that'd be still a little farther south, to Kiriath Arba, the same as Hebron, where Abraham and Isaac sojourned. If I remember correctly, Hebron was something like 20 or 30 miles south of Jerusalem. It slipped my memory right now. Could have been 40 miles, but something like that. But he came to him. Now this is, had he gone down while he was up at, up north at Bethel, at Shechem? Had he come down to see his father? No indication of it. Now it could be that he did. So I'm not going to say that Jacob never went down to see Esau, fulfilling his promise, nor that he waited these several years to come and see his father. He may have. The report here is now that death of his father. Right? And so here he and Esau meet together here, and Isaac, the days of Isaac were 84 years, and Isaac gave up the ghost and died, and was gathered unto his people, old and full of days. Esau and Jacob, his sons, buried him there. That relationship still seems to be good, that of Esau and Jacob. Still seem to be holding out in a fine way. But later on, by the time that the children, the descendants come out of Egypt, completely changed on the part of the descendants. We'll notice that when we come to that, or if we get to it eventually, if we go on with it. All right, now, so they buried him at that particular place, 180 years old and full of days. Notice this expression, he was gathered unto his people. An expression occurring a good many times in the Old Testament. What was their concept of immortality? Their life hereafter. I don't know. The little sketches that you get here and there indicate that they surely had some idea of life beyond this life. That's indicated over and over. When I taught the book of Job in college to students, several times, about every second time, and I did it for 4 years, I'd have them write a paper on Job's concept of life beyond this. Very interesting study. It was hazy. It wasn't complete like as revealed in Christ. The life and immortality were brought to light through the gospel. Christ brought that to light. But at any rate, I placed Job back in the days of Abraham. About that time, the patriarchal era. I think he lived in the patriarchal age. Where the book was written then, I don't know. Don't know when the book was written. Don't know who wrote it. Know nothing about that. I just think that he lived about that time. Be that as it may, the concept is interesting. And you'll notice that as you go through the Old Testament, try to watch that. Now, sometimes when it talks about a resurrection, such as in Isaiah and over in Hosea,